That lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there?
Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Well, critically, the key thing we need to know, given that it's Bristol City tomorrow and the return of Nigel Pearson, is what does Rob Nichols make of our new manager, of course? Michael Carrick is in place. One win, one defeat, a couple of own goals. Obviously, good to actually have own goals because they're obviously can be good in one sense. Rob, how is it panning out? Are you impressed? Or as you said in the latest editorial to the companion to Bristol City tomorrow, issue 630, did you go to the press conference feeling just a little bit cynical? Again, we have to sort of apologise for Ian Lennox, who's decided to actually burst in on the system there. Don't quite know what he's actually doing on that side of things, but he's settled down now. That's important. Honestly, Ian, you know, you can flaunt your Newcastle United stuff, but what they? Rob, let's go back to you, your good self again, and talk to us. What do you make of Michael Carrick?
I've been very impressed. He's very calm. Very calm personality, Alex. He doesn't get too excited with the victories and doesn't get too flustered by the defeats. And saying that, obviously only two matches in. But I wasn't sort of blown away by the idea of having yet another manager, going to yet another restart, reset.
It's like leaders of the Conservative Party, isn't it, Rob? I mean, how many are we going to have?
It's almost as bad, absolutely. Yeah, but he seemed excited to be here. But at the same time, very much feet on the ground, and knowing that the first task in hand is to see us away from the bottom of the table, and that's going to be a struggle for some time to come. So, in saying that, his first game, we got badly caught out at Preston, but I thought early on in the match at Hull, the players were probably still feeling the sort of after effects of that defeat, which came, if you recall, once again. In injury time. So, but we came through that and we got a win, even though we were pegged back. I think it was very good to show the character of the team to come back when we went 1-0 up and they equalised through a deflected goal and then we scored two own goals effectively to win the game. So far, so good. It'd be really nice to get a back-to-back wins now, tomorrow, easy for me to say. Against Bristol City, it's just the start of something. But I have been impressed by, as I say, by his calmness and the way that he the professional manner with which he gets on with everything.
Let's turn to our Irish correspondent, Jenny Finch, of course. Jenny, have you been staggered by what's been going on in the land of Middlesbrough in terms of the events and so on? They still, I believe, have more points than Liverpool, so that's a good result from that point of view, but obviously they're in different divisions. So there we are. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, Michael Carrick is very experienced. He's very well respected as a footballer. And let's hope this is the last one, really. Yeah. Let's hope there's no more after this. Settle, get on with it, do the job, get yourselves up the table, lads. That's what you need to do.
Yeah. We did say that Middlesbrough have more points than Liverpool. Sadly, they don't have more points than Newcastle United, who actually have four more than Middlesbrough at present, with 24 points and currently sitting in the European Championship places in fourth position. Ian, I mean, are you still able to cope with these heady heights that a certain financial injection has actually led to Newcastle's whole routine? I would like to obviously welcome you and go on record as saying that you appreciate Mike Ashley for having obviously paved the way for this renaissance of the Magpies.
Stop being silly.
Had he not sold out, it could have been a wholly different story.
It would have been, yes.
So your thoughts on Middlesbrough?
They've got an outstandingly good young manager now, and who's highly intelligent. And they've got a very, very ambitious people, a number of people backing them. And you probably not, I doubt you've heard this, but they've signed a lad from Australia who's only 18, and he's called Cole. And he left, I've watched him on YouTube. At 17, he went through the Barcelona defence. He ran with the ball through the Barcelona defence. And what was most impressive was he lost it a couple of times, but he's got such good balance, and he's so quick, he got the ball back. And just the ball went wide last, but he had a fantastic game against Barcelona, playing for Australia A, I think it was. And he was only 17, he's 18 now. And they reckon he'll be going with Australia to the World Cup. And he's, I think we got him for about £400,000. I don't know how they've done it, but they have. So they've got a team that are very, very thorough and looking for very, very good young players and people who, you know, are obviously going to be internationals in the future. But yes, I think the future is very bright for Newcastle United. And I hope the overspill helps Middlesbrough and Sunderland as well.
Well, yes, I mean, obviously you're advocating there the trickle-down effect, and personally I think we've had quite enough of that in terms of politics without actually going down to the trickle-down effect in terms of premiership. It's all right, Ian, you can gloat, feel happy to
this
do so.
This is football, Alex, it's much more serious.
Tables will be turned.
This is football, it's far more serious.
And I think you'll find that Middlesbrough is still the last northeastern club to actually have won a trophy. Enough said. Back to yourself, Rob. I mean, clearly there's an interesting range of views in the current edition of Fly Me to the Moon. It is also, we see the return of Nigel Pearson, and certainly he seems to have given short shrifts to Malcolm Christie. Short shrift to Jesse Lingard, amongst other things, in terms of his time. Because we also have a little line which was a fascinating look at the finances of Bristol City, in which... we have the official line, how much are Bristol City worth? Answer, not a lot. I mean, this I thought was a really interesting insight, as ever, by one of the key folk in terms of how finances operate. This is Mike Kelly, of course. How much is a club like Bristol City worth? Nothing, according to the last balance sheet filed by its holding company, which showed the club had net liabilities of over £19 million at the end of the 2021 season. So it's clear that, you know, just in a different league, not everybody can actually celebrate in the wealth of a country with dodgy human rights taking over their sort of regime. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And Bristol City are owned by an incredibly rich man who's based in the Channel Islands, isn't he? And basically, he said that if anyone comes in he will step aside, won't he? Or he will certainly give shares up. Because he's in his 70s now. But nobody, surprise, surprise, nobody has been rushing to go in there. And obviously they've lost an awful lot of money, like so many people in football, through the COVID years. Bristol's been, I think they were very ambitious there to, first of all, to build a new stadium. And then they decided in the end, I think quite rightly, wisely, to redevelop Ashton Gate. So it's been really rebuilt to a high standard. And a couple of years ago, they were putting a lot of money into that team and into that squad. And they were really, you know, earmarking the Premier League. But fortunately, I suppose, that they've not gone quite down the next step of like Derby County or Sheffield Wednesday, clubs that just gambled everything and as a result have gone backwards and almost out of business. So both Bristol City are a team that lives within their means, as a way, but they've got an incredibly wealthy man at the head of it. So it just shows how difficult it is in the football terrain when you're not like a club that's owned by a foreign government or a mega world multinational.
Or indeed a couple of Hollywood superstars, as is the case in Wrexham's line, which, as we've said frequently, with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhaney, certainly seem to be doing some good stuff at Wrexham. And the odds are they probably will get promotion this season, given that they are battling it out with Notts County in the National League. Malcolm Christie, This was a story that I think one or two people might be familiar with, but you've actually given Malcolm a four-page spread, actually a five-page sort of feature in this, a full article,
Actually
a book which you certainly sort of have been plugging. Share with us, Rob, why this keenness for Malcolm Christie, and also why was he so badly treated by Middlesbrough Football Club?
First of all, he's giving a talk, or question and answers, to the supporters club at the Riverside on Monday at 7 p.m. And I thought, I'll get hold of him because he's got a book out. It's a very interesting book. I've listened to snippets that he's been talking about it in podcasts and everything. I spoke to him many years ago when he was at the Borough, and thought I'll get hold of him through his agent, and I rang him up just on Wednesday, and it's really he's exactly like the book. In that he completely doesn't leave anything out. He's incredibly honest about his time in football, it's been said many times, the fact that he was working in a supermarket 1 minute and within months was playing in the Premier League. And as he says in the interview, that's a story that just never happened before, or very rarely, and he doesn't think it'll ever happen again. But that was fantastic. He was living the dream. But at the same time, inside, he felt he was like an imposter. It wasn't, he had no time to sort of adjust that massive step up. He felt everybody else was in a different place to him. And then when he came to Middlesbrough and he picked up an injury, it just added to all these stresses and strains in his mental health, because he never knew how to be a footballer, and he certainly never knew how to be an injured footballer. And as you say in the book, some of the medical advice and assistance from professionals that he got was really, really lacking, I think. And it led to one serious injury after another. He really should have had initially when he broke his leg, he should have had an operation. It seemed that there were several people around him that didn't have... It's amazing. I suppose it's a sign of the times, because we both remember the time when it was a leg break and it was incredibly serious, whether a player would come back or not, or he would be out for a couple of years. But there was nobody around him at that time that had experienced anybody that had had a leg break. And so they tried to avoid an operation, whereas an operation would probably have had him back on the pitch again within the season. But actually, that was the beginning of his woes. So as a young man who's only played... He's only played for about four or five years. He's only played 20 games for Borough, something like that. And it's almost like a career-ending injury that shouldn't be, because he comes back from a broken leg. It turns out his leg isn't, surprise, surprise, it isn't fixed. He's actually trying to play on a broken leg. He breaks his foot. He has just a catalogue of awful sort of injuries, and it really affects his mental health. And as you're reading this, he was excluded from things in the Carling Cup final. Really, really sad to read that they thought that it would be best for the preparation for the injured players not to go with the official party, and that had a terrible effect on him mentally. And I think he's hoping through this book and through talking to people that it can help other people, other players, and other people really in life to recognise some of these problems within themselves and to reach out for help. So I thought it was a very important story to tell, and to give him a lot of space to tell it, because it's as he calls it, it's the other side of football, and it's the other side that is often not spoken about, hidden away, and how things can go so badly wrong so quickly. Fortunately, he's able to come out the other side and share this story and feel, you know, it's all credit to him for doing that, feeling able to do it, and for doing it for so that's going to benefit so many other players.
The book, as we mentioned, is called Malcolm Christie, The Reality of the Dream. I mean, Jenny, this to me initially, I thought, surely this is a 21st century footballer. This is, we'd done away with such things. I thought it was only people like Paul Lake who had sort of injury problems that effectively were effectively suffering from mental health institutions. But it still seems as though, despite all of the apparent financial rewards that are present for footballers in the top league, people can still fall through the through the cracks.
I think so, and I think partly because there's such a large amount of money available and any sports person's career is relatively short, but the number that are suffering from mental health problems in all sports, in rugby, in cycling, in tennis, it's going up. You're under the public gaze the whole time, you've got so much pressure, you've got so little time, and something like a really serious injury like a broken leg, that can finish everything. You've got to start and reset yourself. If you identify as a footballer and you can't be anymore, and you're that young, and you've had so many plaudits, it's going to be very, very hard to get your life back on track again. And everybody's going to know you've fallen to pieces, and that's really going to help, isn't it? So I think it's very much a sign of the times, and I feel very sorry for anyone who falls into that.
Yeah. His statistics, as you rightly said, Rob, I mean, we just included his Middlesbrough statistics, not his his Derby County ones. Between 2003 and 2007, he made 29 appearances and 20 substitute appearances, scoring 9 goals. So, you know, 9 goals from 29 appearances isn't a bad return, almost one in every 3 games, basically. But obviously a tragic end. Ian, any thoughts from yourself on Malcolm Christie?
I was thinking as it was talking, one of my favourite players that I saw was a player called Tony Green, who played for Blackpool and came to play for Newcastle. And he got injured at Crystal Palace when he played for Newcastle. He only played about 30 games for us and he never played again. And it was a knee injury he got. And today it would have been a minor injury almost. It would have been because what has been proved is the sort of microsurgery that they do, you know, the keyhole surgery and stuff like that. So that's improved a lot. But I think as Jenny said, what has got a lot worse is the amount of public attention on footballers, their social lives, all sorts of things like that. And the amount of cameras at games, everything's spotted now. So there's all sorts of pressures on them that weren't there 40 years ago. I remember talking to Mark MacDonald. He scored a famous goal against Bolton Wanderers in the cup tie. It was on Match of the Day, and basically it was, most people said it was his best ever goal. And I met him and I said, I'm one of the few people who don't agree with that. I said it was your best ever goal. My opinion was against Leicester, but it wasn't on television. And he said, and he agreed with me. I said basically what happened was Natras passed the ball to him from, he was 35 yards out, I said, in his left foot. I was actually, by a fluke in the crowd, I was level with him when he hit it. And I've never seen a ball hit so hard. And it just shot into the net. And he said, I said, it was 35 yards out at least. He said, it was 37. He said, I went out and counted the strides afterwards. But no, that goal isn't there any longer. It's never on. There's no cameras.
But Ian, we know that nothing happened in football before 1993 and 1994 when the Premier League launched. Everything before that just didn't happen. Yeah. You know, it was all rewritten and re-envisaged. You'll be singing the praises of Almiron next. But that's all thanks to Jack Grealish's giving a morale boosting talk at the end of last season. Rob, maybe it's the time of the year, but I was saddened to see that it could be bye bye to Borough Base Camp.
Yeah, sadly, I think the building looks like it's being sold, and there's that uncertainty. It's got a lot of sort of structural problems, and it's costing a lot of money to run. And when you don't know who your landlord is going to be, and how can you invest anything in it? So it's been superb that the things that they've put on in the last 2 or 3 years, that all, not just for football, but all sorts of people have been accommodated there. Be a big loss for the town. And I hope that, Alex, there's an awful lot going on around Exchange Place area, a lot of investment, restaurants and things like that. and lots of new offices. I hope they don't forget about the actual people and the need for places with programs that reach out to football fans and art fans and music fans and you know, I hope that is remembered and that whoever develops that area has some space for us because they need football in town now. They need football during the day and during the evening because the shops have gone, obviously. So yeah, I wanted to thank Basecamp for all that they've done. We've done so many great things pre-match with Borough Shirt Museum and people with memorabilia, Gordon Rees, and lots of events, talks and things. And I hope, like, added to the sort of the event of a football match day. And it would be lovely to think that whoever owns all that comes back to Basecamp and says, well, you're the experts and you've got all the local knowledge and you've built up all this for the last couple of years. Will you help continue this? But we shall wait and see.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed things will be mapped out for that. Jimmy Flynn has submitted another piece here, which I'm sure that Ian will be able to... He'll be in his element, actually, I suspect, because it's all about misery. Sorry, Ian. Rob, would you like us to take us through, we'll do our usual reading of Jimmy Flynn's incarnation and Borough's long-suffering fans?
Yeah, Jimmy wrote this before Malcolm Christie was announced. So this is something that's kind of a tribute to Chris Wilder and him leaving the club.
Malcolm Christie, obviously. Michael Carrick. Yeah. I mean, he's easily confused, but I think Carrick had a slightly more successful playing career.
Carrick and Christie actually played in the under-21s together. So it says that in the interview, they've actually spoken to the club because Malcolm Christie is now working at the academy, passing on all his skills and experience to the young players. And they've had a chat. Malcolm Christie is eyeing up what Michael Carrick is now trying to achieve and wondering if he could one day do that. So, yeah, there is a link there. But this is Borough's long-suffering fans, the people on the terraces that pay the money and have to suffer one manager after another. Borough's long-suffering fans. With a new football season well underway, Borough fans' pre-season optimism is fast fading away.
Like so often in Borough's recent history, a campaign of struggle this is shaping to be.
It appears the predestined role of long-suffering fans is to support a team of perennial also-rans.
Once again, despairing diehards have little to cheer with Borough propping up football's second tier.
A season that began with promotion hopes and aspiration has become a nightmare battle against relegation.
Borough, a club that has produced many stars of the game, a seat at football's top table are struggling to claim.
With a stadium of facilities second to none, its on-field struggles for success go on and on.
For Borough's current demise, Chris Wilder has carried the can and become Borough's latest managerial yesterday man.
Steve Gibson, once blessed with the patience of a saint, now dismisses failing managers with little restraint.
Unlucky Chris is the third Borough manager in short time to find the unpredictable bounce of a Riverside ball can be unkind.
He now rejoins the managerial merry-go-round, where doubtless his Borough successor will be found.
Hopefully the next manager Borough opt to install will get extra time and the run of the ball. So, Ian, or as I like to say, Eeyore, was that one which you thought, yeah, this is all right? I mean, I can't stand all this success we're having at Newcastle, all these winning of games and such like stuff. I'd much rather be sort of very happier with Middlesbrough in the sort of dreary land of the Championship.
Well, I'm much more used to misery, so yes, suppose. I quite like his rhyming couplets, actually.
There we are. And if Ian likes your rhyming couplets, it could be the start of a whole new relationship.
Careful.
Jenny, what's your critical of a view of that from Tipperary?
I think it was very clever. I like the way he wove all the football terminology into it. And I'm with Ian. His rhyming couplets are excellent.
There we are. Exactly.
That's quite in the down of it, Jenny.
Obviously, been doing iambic pentameter before too long. Okay, let's move on to the last set of games before, of course, the Human Rights World Cup. Oh, sorry, the Qatar World Cup actually starts coming into play for us. Predictions. Ian, what's your prediction for Middlesbrough versus Bristol City?
I think if Middlesbrough, well, we've not got a good record against Bristol City recently, I think. Can't win this time. They'll never win. I think I've heard that Bristol City have got four centre halves injured. I think it's Michael Carrick's first home game since he came. So there should be a huge crowd, a bigger crowd than normal, and they'll be more positive. So everything's going for them, really. Is it true that Jonathan Woodgate's joining Michael Carrick as well?
He's the coach, yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan Woodgate is a very shrewd sort of commentator on a football match. I remember him playing for Newcastle Reserves, and you could hear what the instructions. And your young Stephen Taylor was playing with him. He's telling him what to do, and he's reading two moves ahead of what was happening all the time. He knew his stuff. So hopefully there'll be a very successful pairing.
Steve Gibson's obsession with the letter W to hand, because obviously Woodgate, Wilder, Warnock, you could actually argue Tony Mowbray, you just have the M upside down and it's a W. I think it's something to do with...
It's Australian period, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Steve Gibson just likes W's, you know, it can be a whole system there. So what's your score prediction then, Ian?
2-0.
To Middlesbrough. Okay, and Jenny, what are you going to go for as far as the Robins are concerned as they fly off to Teesside with, of course, ex-Borough manager Nigel Pearson, who doesn't take any stick from nobody?
No.
Well, given all the problems they're experiencing that Ian's just very kindly set out for me, I'd like to say 2-1. I have a feeling it might be 1-1, but I'd be terrific if it was 2-1, because they'll actually leap over them in the table, and that's always a good feeling.
Bristol have only won one in the last five games. So they're not
I have a feeling it may well be 2-1. Rob, what are you going for?
Well, I would have gone for 2-1 as well. And Ian's quite right. They've got the amount of times that they've put one over on us at the Riverside, and often when they're not playing very well. Wasn't it Tony Mowbray's first home game, and they spoiled the party? I think that's the case. They've done it before, but hopefully not this time. 2-1 win would be good. And back-to-back home wins, as I said at the start, really important. Really important.
And then, of course, it's a trip to the Vegas of the North, the West Coast personified, as you head off to the seaside of Blackpool on Tuesday night, which clearly is going to be an absolute delight on the 8th of November to go away against Blackpool. Jenny, what do you think against Blackpool versus Middlesbrough?
I think it might be very hyped up and a tedious goalless draw.
Ian, you were talking about Blackpool, obviously, just a few moments ago. So is it something which you think, I remember Jimmy Armfield at his finest, and I even remember the Stanley Matthews Cup final, or maybe not that far.
I do, actually, yes.
So what's your prediction then, Ian? Oh, ancient one and revered mind.
I think 1-1. I think we'll go for it. I'll be happy with 1-1.
Okay. And Rob?
I can see that Ian's wearing a tangerine top there as well, isn't he? So he must he must favour Blackpool. This was a game that was called off, but because of the Queen dying. Actually, this is the game that we were supposed to play on Saturday. So it was the first ever Saturday game against Blackpool in about 20 years, and there were thousands of Borough fans going. Oh. I think a lot of tickets have been cashed in since, and lots of people walked me. It was not quite as attractive.
The illuminations have been taken down, so they're not there. You know, I think. I presume so. Don't they wrap up sort of around about October? And do they still keep going in November?
Thing, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know. I'll let you know. I'm hoping that we can. I would settle for a draw if we won against Bristol City, but just in case we don't, then I'm going to go for 2-1 in that game as well, because Blackpool are also struggling at the moment.
Indeed. So we've had Blackpool. We obviously have the Robins from Bristol City. We conclude this side of the Qatari well-balanced World Cup with the Canaries. Of course, Norwich City, who have had a bit of an interesting season so far. I mean, it looked as though they were kind of self-destructing at one stage, but they seem to have righted the ship a little bit and are currently, it's lose, draw, lose, win, draw. 29 points is what they have from 19 games, currently in fifth position. Ian, what do you think about Norwich City away?
I think I fancy Norwich in that one, actually. I think they're coming. They had a bad patch at the start of the season, didn't they? I think they'll 1-0 Norwich.
Timo Pukki, the man who obviously scores lots of goals in the Championship, but not so in the Premier League. Maybe he'll actually follow through the Mitrovic line and start doing various other bits and pieces within that. Jenny, what are your thoughts on Norwich away?
I think it depends if they send Delia Smith onto the pitch or not.
Let's be Avenue.
Yeah, that's the one. I would love to see Borough beat Norwich, but I think Ian's right. I think it's a 1-0 to Norwich. Yes.
Which pretty means that that dream of mid-table mediocrity should be secured then, Rob, basically, with a win, a draw and a defeat, really, in terms of the predictions. But maybe you're looking for a bounce-back ability, which will actually sort of show that the Carrick era will projected with a rockets until we actually resume ahead of the next game, of course, on Saturday, December the 10th, which is, of course, home to Luton Town.
The Hatters. Absolutely. Well, let's go into the World Cup with on the back of a draw. That would and a nice unbeaten run under Michael Carrick. That'll mean we'll feel a lot better when we emerge. While the World Cup is still on, of course, when we play Luton, but then we can all look forward to that game.
Okay, so how can people subscribe for the remaining editions of Fly Me to the Moon and indeed purchase the paper edition of the magazine that we've just had the companion podcast to?
Indeed, fmttmborough.com is the website. If you click on the fanzine shop, it's got the subscription details and it's got the current fanzine for sale. Or maybe if you're listening to this beforehand, you might be able to find me at the Riverside tomorrow where I'll be selling my fanzines just in front of the ground. And also tomorrow, Alex, there's a collection behind the North Stand for the Middlesbrough Food Bank. So if anyone can bring like a spare tin or a spare pound and put it in the collection, just look out for the van parked behind the North Stand, where we'll also have a little selfie frame. So we're trying to get people to post for photographs and stick them on their own social media for My Borough, My Shirt, which is our kind of working with a football club and working with a town. It's all to do with pride of place and people feeling part of the football club and part of the town.
And a fun fact from My Fuji Film and their recent feature on taking photographs. Apparently, men are a lot vainer than women when it comes to selecting the perfect selfie. Right. We on average, men actually have 9 attempts before we actually get the photograph that we want, whereas women actually only have 8 attempts before they actually select on what their image is going to be.
But they use makeup 16 times before they go there, though.
Ian, you may say that gross sexist comment, which is so redolent of the 20th century's worst aspects, I couldn't possibly comment. I think we have to step away from that into a whole new world. I will actually give a full thumbs up to Jude, age 12, who writes about his first rugby league match, which is what his father took him to see, New Zealand versus Nigeria rugby league, of course, at Hull City. He found it to be refreshing, although he didn't really understand it. Jenny, I mean, you're more a rugby union gal, but in terms of rugby and so on, are you enthralled by the current sort of tournaments that are taking place?
Well, I'm certainly enthralled by the Women's World Cup. It's looking so good and it looks like we're heading for the same final as last time, England, New Zealand at home. And if England managed to beat them, that would be absolutely wonderful. So, yeah, I am completely enthralled.
Will there be dancing in the streets of Tipperary?
I doubt that very much indeed, especially as we've just had this huge storm and the streets are like up to the ankles in mud.
Oh. There you have it. And finally, Jenny, any sign of new novels in the shops for Christmas from your good self? Can people start purchasing them as early Christmas presents?
Not immediately, but Puppy Brain goes to press on Monday. And so it will be available to order to download the ebook and stuff, hopefully by the end of the first week of December. And I'm ordering some, which I will sign and dedicate if people want them and can send them off. So they can contact me via my website, jennyfinch.me.uk, and I will be happy to oblige.
And Ian, we know that whilst Newcastle United continue to win, then basically you're just too happy to actually do any writing. So that's perfectly understandable.
I've stopped writing until they lose a match.
So in the month of November, people used to grow moustaches and basically have a Movember. And I was just we're not going down that line. Ian simply actually put down his pen, or indeed he's writing it. It just goes to show. Ian Lennox, Jenny Finch, Rob Nichols, huge thanks. Rob, what do we need to do at this particular stage before we head into Bristol City land? Those immortal words, which I know Jenny and Ian will sing with a passion.
On the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
Up the Borough.